Morgan's Executive Series.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here. As part of the Morgan's Executive Series, I'm joined by Uli Becker. Thank you for coming into our studio all the way from Germany.
Thank you for inviting me.
Uli, can you tell us a bit about your background in business and in particular sport?
So I've been a 25-year veteran in the sporting goods industry. Right after school, I was too much in love with sport to leave it. Hence, I decided I work in sport. So I joined Adidas in 1990, spent there 16 years. And when Adidas acquired Reebok in 2006, so end of 2005, beginning of 2006, I then moved over from Adidas to Boston to actually work on Reebok. Primarily front office role, so from product, marketing, development, sales, all the way to executive roles, obviously CMO, CEO at the end on the Reebok side, to in global roles, regional roles, local roles. So my home, in a way, despite where I lived, was a plane to also go places all around. And so that time came to an end in 2014 when I decided for the first time maybe family is more important. So leaving the big picture of sport and took a time out to recalibrate. And out of that came kind of time spent with startups that found me. I didn't even know much about the startup scene at that time, but people found me through LinkedIn, and out of that developed a kind of boutique business to advise and mentor startup companies in different sectors to help give back what I've been told and what I learned through mentors during my young years, to help them actually bring an idea to life and help guide and coach the process. And invest to a degree if they are meaningful investments. So I've done that all myself for a few years, and in between I've also teamed up with different capacities, one of which is Hype Sports Innovation, which is a group of fanatics about sport that made their mission to actually create an infrastructure for sports tech innovation to actually have a home virtually around the world. So it is about identifying great startups, help coach them through a process, and then create network for them as well to actually get them one level further in terms of connections and networks and also investment money.
Terrific. Working for a global giant, for you can call it a global giant, for so long through your life, and then coming out the other side and meeting great minds and entrepreneurs with fantastic ideas. Is there still a disconnect, you think, a little bit between large-scale organizations and the fast-paced entrepreneurial startup scene?
Yeah, of course there is. Specifically in the time that we're in, where the requirement for change is increasing. In every industry with every big company. And you realize that oil tankers are much, much tougher to move around, to stop and move around, versus working with little speedboats. And that, I think, is the beauty of it. Of course, in 25 years, we've done a lot of changes. And I would say sporting goods is a rather dynamic industry with a young target that is always changing to actually stay in tune versus other industries, i.e., car manufacturers, like in Germany, for example, which are, less progressive in terms of change. And you then move over and go into the startup world, you actually don't have any constraints. You have other constraints like a lack of financial resources potentially, but the purity of ideas and the thinking of what's the creative way to bring it to life can't be stopped. And that's the beauty of actually redefining the business we're in today's world, because it's possible.
And in terms of the business learnings that you've acquired over your time and you're providing to these startup founders, what's something which I suppose you talk to these startup founders about, and is there an attitude, or is there an element of wisdom, or is it building culture once they get a bit stronger?
I thought the advice comes at the end.
Does it? Right.
Okay. But I can also obviously take that on and say, well, I don't know, there's a specific formula. I have kind of my own criteria that first of all come in place when I kind of select who I want to work with closer, because it's obviously also a time capacity question. So it has to be, like, I need to see people that are driven, that are, not necessarily visionaries, but if they have a vision, great, but they have an idea that they really put their arms around, they're passionate about, and it can be kind of assessed that this idea can become meaningful, be it as it disrupts a market or it redefines a market or it's a no solution for an existing market as it you know, hits a specific target audience that you can actually kind of assume is sizable enough to be meaningful in business results at the end of the day so that you spend time. So disruption is a big issue. People are a big issue. In today's world, for me personally, purpose is an important factor. So personally, because I've sold enough pieces of footwear and apparel that I believe the world doesn't need more of that. And also in the context of the world today is driven by young people that actually buy into brands that that expect more than just a financial transaction. So even if they purchase a product, they actually buy the brand, which we always said they would. But in today's world, the you know construction of what's the value construct of a brand plays a much, much bigger role. So we've learned that recently, you know, from my angle in the US, you think about an old school brand like Patagonia, has always been created on great values of sustainability. In today's world, they also step up in terms of being politically, you know, kind of positioned, and they speak up, and people around them actually take them serious and respect them for their opinion. You don't have to necessarily agree with everything, but they actually speak up, which is what young people today also buy into. And so, for me, the purpose of forming a company and why you do it, and how you also pay back into the Commonwealth pot of budgets is actually really important. So that for me is an important factor.
You mentioned that building that brand. I mean, the successful brands in the world, like the McDonald's, the Apples, et cetera, the Coca-Colas, what have they done right in your view?
Well, I guess it's always a question of timing to assess what they did right. Because if I was in McDonald's shoes today, I don't think they've done many things right. They tried a lot of things to rescue the situation versus what they've built, obviously, over time. But they remain a fast food place at low cost, providing nutrition that the world really can't live off. And if you eat too much of it, you're getting sick. So it's not bad intention. The idea was a good idea to get fast food to everyone quickly. But that was 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's not there today anymore. So I would differentiate the examples as in they were good once and they haven't figured out how to become good again. Apple is another great example, of course, you know, next to second most valuable company in the world. I believe their trick was on one side to teach the world in 84 to be different, but then they were different and great, and then they almost died a couple of times in between. But when Jobs came back, and obviously in hindsight, it's so logical today, they were the only consumer tech company that actually made it their value to actually not scare people away from tech companies, because using their products became intuitively easy. You didn't have to, you know, read through 150 pages of manuals. And so they brought well-designed products, which were very pretty in a way that everybody was able to use them. And they were the only tech company that ever did that. Hence, there's a big reason for that success.
How important is feedback along the way? I mean, Apple obviously created this product that people desire or potentially desired. They try the product out and then they get this raft of feedback saying, oh, it's a terrible product. I mean, do you have to stay ahead of the curve or meet the market demand?
I think it's a mixture of both. I personally believe feedback is good. It just depends who gives you the feedback. Not every feedback is important, but you need to listen and figure out what can be valuable information that also leads to an action chain of changes or what isn't. And I think you remember, I think Steve Jobs, you know, quotes where he said, like, every focus group that is there out there in the world, I will never go to one because I will know what is important. And to a degree, I think he's right, because some of the products and projects that have become hugely successful, if you would have asked people, do you need that? They would have said no, they would have never been created, and they became, you know, the best products in the world, i.e. the remote control that nobody actually thought needed. And when you think about the most technical gadget we run around with and we can't live without, it's a mobile phone. Nobody would have thought, well, I need to run around with a phone to be able to call people from anywhere. And in today's world, it's the most intelligent product out there.
And when you're at Adidas and Reebok and now talking to the startups, I mean, in terms of the way, the messaging, the millennials that are driving consumption, et cetera, and the way that, that brands are perceived because of this 24-hour loop of social media, et cetera, I mean, can you get caught up in all of this and say it's all too much, or do you have to embrace it and say, right, one piece of damage on a social media could destroy the whole company?
Well, I believe there is a challenge attached to that. Number one, I think you do need to embrace it. And depending on who you are and who you market to, let's say if I was in the golf business, maybe the whole digitalization of marketing is not yet that important because they have a struggle to actually engage with people, to bring people into golf. And the consumer group you talk with right now is rather growing older, and it's not so progressive, let's say. They have money, so it's still okay, but it's not future. If you're Adidas or you're Nike or Reebok, then obviously you better embrace it, because if you don't, you'll be left out. And the risk on the other side is you don't do it right and professionally with regard to what is your marketing concept, and is it thought through, and also has it depth, versus is it only shine? Kids today call bullshit on you in 0 second. And if you do mistakes on top of that, the impact it has on decreasing your value in terms of perception and image can be drastic. I mean, we know that today. So which also is an opportunity for startups, because you can grow up faster in terms of building awareness without just spending millions on a TV campaign. But at the same time, it also haunts you if you do bigger mistakes that also can cause a major nightmare for you. There's no doubt.
In the messaging and marketing side of things, and advertising has changed. I mean, back in the 90s, I'd assume that I mean, still sports stars and using people endorsements. I mean, that may not be as effective now, you think? Or is it changing still, traditional advertising?
Well, it is. Well, you know, obviously, media is changing, so everything has become far more, digital in its form. You have newsrooms in almost every bigger sports company, because it's about the content of today needs to be used today. So it's almost like it's a newsroom as it is that broadcasts the latest of the day, but this is done by brands now. Now, I think that's a good thing. It has not changed the fact that, athlete endorsements, team endorsements are really important. And I actually spoke to the UQ MBA group this morning and spoke a bit about the All Blacks, the case study, because I worked with them on the Adidas side quite a bit. Marketing with them, there's never a lack of concept, because they're so rich in terms of qualities you can actually be creative around. But the media selection in terms of who do you need and how do you need them has completely changed, because you also now need social media channels for your athletes, because they all of a sudden become avenues to the consumers as much as the website of the All Blacks themselves or Adidas that features information going sideways. So it has become, I would say, more bigger in terms of opportunity. Or it can scare you because it's more fragmented. But I think it's more a playground that allows you to differentiate your way how to get to the consumer in a smarter way.
Early on a personal level, you mentioned after 25 years that you wanted to spend some time with your family. I mean, entrepreneurs and startup founders can work around the clock and 24/7, et cetera. But there's an element of mental health and there's an element of work-life balance. Can you talk about your experience on that?
Well, I can say is, I clearly believe if you love what you're doing, it's not stress, it's actually enjoyment, it's passion. If you don't love what you're doing, it's bad stress, and it's going to haunt you over time. It's going to create frustration. So I have to say, for my own balance sheet, my wife would say maybe different, but I feel so privileged that for my whole professional career so far, I've been able to do things that I was really passionate about, and hence have not felt that there was so much stress, so my balance was out of whack. Now, did I spend enough time with the family during the time when the kids grew up, instead of being in airplanes to travel to places? Yeah. So that's maybe the challenge in terms of not having have spent enough time with the family in those times. But in terms of job, it was also, there was a return for that. So it, I must say, I've not had the bad signs. When I became frustrated and I felt I needed a break, I just left and said, I'm going to take a time out and then think what other great things are there in life. And the last 4 years were very rewarding in a way that I do, that I like what I'm doing. And at the same time, I, like I said, my commute when I'm at home is 45 seconds walking down the stairs into my office and then doing sport in between. So I love the flexibility of it. And so I can't complain myself. What I do say to young people, like also this morning or last night also to the group, was that, you know, when you enter the working place, either an employment form or as an entrepreneur, normally you need to look at 15 years of investment. Take money off the table to say, well, I deserve more, because you likely won't get it, which means you spend far more time and effort in the first 15 years to get your job done and be good. And you always will feel underpaid, so don't make it a priority, because the second 15 years of your professional life hopefully will do the opposite. You actually get more money here than you deserve, because you've accomplished something that gets you to positions that that gets you also a good payment. And likely the same applies to being an entrepreneur. The first 5 years of trying to get out of the misery are the most painful ones. Year 5 to 10, maybe already really good. After year 10 and your business is sustainable, you're making money without getting up in the morning. So,
we talk a lot about failure in the entrepreneurial landscape. And what are your views on failure and testing new things and failing fast?
It's also a good one. Without failure, you're not progressing and you can't win. You know, I think I quoted Michael Jordan yesterday's, you know, saying like, if I wouldn't have missed the rim 20,000 times, if I wouldn't have missed 26 game-ending shots that didn't go in, I would have never been who I am today. And so the whole notion of you can be down about losing, just be smart about learning why that was the case and do it better next time. And that's the lesson you have to have learned. When I had my biggest professional challenges, like at Reebok, when we tried to fix an engine while it was driving, I always look back into what did I learn last time when I was challenged. I never looked back and looked at what was the party like when we won the last game, because you don't learn much other than getting a headache maybe the next day. But you do learn from tackling challenges, getting around them, because that's the training for the next challenge. So you should never be down about losing. You should just not lose 10 times in a row. You should learn from it and then do better next time. It's part of life.
Absolutely. And looking at the modern day topic of basketball, I mean, the field goal percentage of LeBron James would be 50% maybe, or 60%. Yeah. I don't think if you ask the member on the street what the percentage is, they say, oh, 90 or 100%. Yeah. He misses every second shot, for instance.
No, that would be Shaq attack.
Shaq attack, that's right. Australia, you're here. Yes. Tell us why you're here and your thoughts on the region.
I am so thankful for having spent already a week here, because I've seen so many great things. So Brisbane, beautiful. Gold Coast, I want to retire after I've been there for the first time. And I've met people that I am so impressed by. I've worked very closely with UQ, because obviously our accelerator pitch that is done with UQ and Hype Sports Innovation happened last Monday at the Gold Coast. And I am so so impressed by the quality of startups that we've seen, 11 of them, and how they were handled. Like Bernie and Joan, who is here. I'm very impressed how they handled the whole cohort for the last, I think, already 13 weeks, with great results that led to great pitches, that leads to money that can be put into the companies that were elected or selected last Monday. And so I've been really thankful for everything I've been able to experience here. So very, very cool experience.
I've got two more questions. One is, have you seen a cricket match yet?
No, I've not seen a cricket match yet. Because while I'm here, or?
Yeah, well, generally.
Actually, I've So I will see an Aussie rules football game Saturday in Melbourne, which I have not seen yet in my life.
It'll be very confusing, I'm sure.
You think so? Yeah. Okay. I did see some on TV, though. So, but having said that, that would be one
somewhere box between to NFL tick. And rugby union, perhaps.
And so I've not seen a rugby game live, but I've been often in India during my Reebok time, so I know how crazy people are about it. So.
Yep. And final question, the tips for the future in terms of tech trends. What are you most excited about when it comes to technology trends? Is it driverless cars or AI or people talking about virtual reality, etc.?
I would say tech progress will impact, you know, at least when I look at my focus area sport, every corner of it will produce shoes that may not have much to do with the shoes that we grew up with, because tech allows that, where they are produced, how they are developed. You go into the digital space of esport, all of a sudden there's something completely new coming up, which is about fan engagement, but then another way of doing sport, wearables in terms of athletes' improvement. The bank of categories that will be positively impacted by tech progress in the future is unbelievable. That's why it's very important to stay open with a visor and actually help assess value and help manage companies to become meaningful. I firmly believe that in 5 to 10 years from now, the big companies that we know, many of them may be gone, and there will be new companies, not just in the tech world, like we've seen in Facebook. There was no Facebook before Google, but also in traditional arenas where there's a chance to actually make a huge company that is founded with right values and innovation that isn't there today, and others that were big yesterday won't be there anymore.
Billy, thank you so much for coming in and having a chat and sharing your story with our network. Congratulations on what you achieved in your career, and all the best with Hype and the startups that you invest in, and also help to mentor.
Thank you so much.